Granny waited until their footsteps had died away and took off her headscarf.
"Damn thing," she said. "Esk, go and listen at the door."
She removed the towel from Simon's head and felt his temperature.
"It was very good of you to come," said Esk, "and you so busy with your work and everything."
"Hmm."
Granny pursed her lips. She pulled up Simon's eyelids and sought his pulse. She laid an ear on his xylophone chest and listened to his heart. She sat for some time quite motionless, probing around inside his head. She frowned.
"Is he all right?"
said Esk anxiously. Granny looked at the stone walls.
"Drat this place," she said. "It's no place for sick people."
"Yes, but is he all right?"
"What?"
Granny was startled out of her thoughts.
"Oh, yes, probably, wherever he is."
Esk stared at her, and then at Simon's body.
"Nobody's home,"
said Granny simply.
"What do you mean?"
"Listen to the child," said Granny. "You'd think I taught her nothing. I mean his mind's wandering. He's gone out of his head."
She looked at Simon's body with something verging on admiration.
"Quite surprising, really," she added. "I never yet met a wizard who could borrow."
She turned to Esk, whose mouth was a horrified O.
"I remember when I was a girl, old Nanny Annapel went wandering. Got too wrapped up with being a vixen, as I recall. Took us days to find her. And then there was you, too. I never would have found you if it wasn't for that staff thing. And what have you done with it, girl?"
"It hit him," Esk muttered. "It tried to kill him. I threw it in the river."
"Not a nice thing to do after it saved you," said Granny.
"It saved me by hitting him."
"Didn't you realize he was calling to them things?"
"That's not true."
Granny stared into Esk's defiant eyes, and the thought came to her. I've lost her. 3 years of work down the privy. She couldn't be a wizard, but she might have been a witch.
"Why isn't it true, Miss Clever?"
she said.
"He wouldn't do something like that."
Esk was near to tears.
"I heard him speak. He's... well, he's not evil. He's a brilliant person. He nearly understands how everything works. He's..."
"I expect he's a very nice boy," said Granny sourly. "I never said he was a black wizard, did I?"
"They're horrible things," Esk sobbed. "He wouldn't call out to them. He wants everything that they're not. And you're a wicked old..."
The slap rang like a bell. Esk staggered back, white with shock. Granny stood with her hand upraised, trembling. She'd struck Esk once before. The blow a baby gets to introduce it to the world and give it a rough idea of what to expect from life. But that had been the last time. In 3 years under the same roof, there had been cause enough, when milk had been left to boil over, or the goats had been carelessly left without water. But a sharp word, or a sharper silence, had done more than force ever could and left no bruises. She grabbed Esk firmly by the shoulders and stared into her eyes.
"Listen to me," she said urgently. "Didn't I always say to you that if you use magic, you should go through the world like a knife goes through water? Didn't I say that?"
Esk, mesmerized like a cornered rabbit, nodded.
"And you thought that was just old Granny's way, didn't you? But the fact is that if you use magic, you draw attention to yourself. From them. They watch the world all the time. Ordinary minds are just vague to them. They hardly bother with them. But a mind with magic in it shines out, you see. It's a beacon to them. It's not darkness. It calls them. It's light. Light that creates the shadows."
But why are they interested? What do they want?
"Life and shape," said Granny.
She sagged and let go of Esk.
"They're pathetic, really," she said. "They've got no life or shape themselves, but what they can steal. They could no more survive in this world than a fish could live in a fire. But that doesn't stop them trying. They're just bright enough to hate us because we're alive.
Esk shivered. She remembered the gritty feel of the cold sand.
What are they? I always thought they were just a sort of demon.
Nah. No one really knows. They're just the things from the dungeon dimensions, outside the universe, that's all. Shadow creatures.
She turned back to the prone form of Simon.
You wouldn't have any idea where he is, would you?
She said, looking shrewdly at Esk.
Not gone off flying with the seagulls, has he?
Esk shook her head.
No, said Granny. I didn't think so. They've got him, haven't they?
It wasn't a question. Esk nodded, her face a mask of misery.
It's not your fault, said Granny. His mind gave them an opening, and when he was knocked out, they took it back with them.
Only... She drummed her fingers on the edge of the bed and appeared to reach a decision.
Who is the most important wizard around here? She demanded.
Lord Cutangle, said Esk. He's the Arch-Chancellor. He's one of the ones who was in here.
The fat one, or the one like a streak of vinegar?
Esk dragged her mind from the image of Simon on the cold desert and found herself saying,
He's an 8th-level wizard and a 33-degree mage, actually.
You mean he's bent?
Said Granny.
All this hanging around wizards has made you take them seriously, my girl. They all call themselves the Lord High This and the Imperial That. It's all part of the game. Even magicians do it. You'd think they'd be more sensible at least, but no. They call around saying they're the amazing Bonko and Doris. Anyway, where is this high rum tiddly-poo?
They'll be at dinner in the Great Hall, said Esk.
Can he bring Simon back, then?
That's the difficult part, said Granny. I dare say we could all get something back easily enough. Walking and talking, just like anyone. Whether it would be Simon is quite another sack of ferrets.
She stood up.
Let's find this Great Hall, then. No time to waste.
Women aren't allowed in, said Esk. Granny stopped in the doorway. Her shoulders rose. She turned around very slowly.
What did you say?
She said.
Did these old ears deceive me? And don't say they did, because they didn't.
Sorry, said Esk. Force of habit.
I can see you've been getting ideas below your station, said Granny coldly. Go and find someone to watch over the lad, and let's see what's so great about this hall that I mustn't set foot in it.
And thus it was, while the entire faculty of Unseen University were dining in the venerable hall, the doors were flung back with a dramatic effect that was rather spoiled when one of them rebounded off a waiter and caught Granny a crack on the shin. Instead of the defiant stride she had intended to make across the checkered floor, she was forced to half-hop, half-limp. But she hoped that she hopped with dignity. Esk hurried along behind her, acutely aware of the hundreds of eyes that were turned towards them. The roar of conversation and the clatter of cutlery faded away. A couple of chairs were knocked over. At the far end of the hall, she could see the most senior wizards at their high table, which in fact bobbed a few feet off the floor. They were staring. A medium-grade wizard, Esk recognized him as a lecturer in applied astrology, rushed towards them, waving his hands.
No, 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 he shouted. Wrong door, you must go away.
Don't mind me,
said Granny calmly, pushing past him.
No, no, it's against the law. You must go away now. Ladies are not allowed in here.
I'm not a lady, I'm a witch, said Granny.
She turned to Esk.
Is he very important?
I don't think so, said Esk.
Right.
Granny turned to the lecturer.
Go and find me an important wizard, please, quickly.
Esk tapped her on the back. A couple of wizards, with a rather greater presence of mind, had nipped smartly out of the door behind them, and now several college porters were advancing threateningly up the hall to the cheers and catcalls of the students. Esk had never much liked the porters, who lived a private life in their lodge, but now she felt a pang of sympathy for them. Two of them reached out hairy hands and grabbed Granny's shoulders.
The arm disappeared behind her back, and there was a brief flurry of movement that ended with the men hopping away, clutching bits of themselves and swearing.
Hatpin, said Granny.
She grabbed Esk with her free hand and swept towards the high table, glaring at anyone who so much as looked as if they were going to get in her way. The younger students, who knew free entertainment when they saw it, stamped and cheered and banged their plates on the long tables. The high table settled on the tiles with a thump, and the senior wizards hurriedly lined up behind Q-Tangle as he tried to summon up his reserves of dignity. His efforts didn't really work. It's very hard to look dignified with a napkin tucked into one's collar. He raised his hands for silence, and the hall waited expectantly as Granny and Esk approached him. Granny was looking interestedly at the ancient paintings and statues of bygone mages.
"Who are them buggers?"
she said out of the corner of her mouth.
"They used to be the chief wizards," whispered Esk.
"They look constipated. I never met a wizard who was regular," said Granny.
"They're a nuisance to dust, that's all I know," said Esk.
Q-Tangle stood with his legs planted wide apart, arms akimbo, and stomach giving an impression of a beginner's ski slope. The whole of him, therefore, adopting a pose usually associated with Henry VIII, but with an option of Henry IX and X as well.
"Well,"
he said,
"what is the meaning of this outrage?"
"Is he important?"
said Granny to Esk.
"I, madam, am the Arch-Chancellor, and I happen to run this university. And you, madam, are trespassing in very dangerous territory indeed. I warn you that stop looking at me like that."
Q-Tangle staggered backwards, his hands raised to ward off Granny's gaze. The wizards behind him scattered, turning over tables in their haste to avoid the stare. Granny's eyes had changed. Esk had never seen them like this before. They were perfectly silver, like little round mirrors reflecting all they saw. Q-Tangle was a vanishing small dot in their depths, his mouth open, his tiny matchstick arms waving in desperation. The Arch-Chancellor backed into a pillar, and the shock made him recover. He shook his head irritably, cupped a hand, and sent a stream of white fire streaking towards the witch. Without dropping her iridescent stare, Granny raised a hand and deflected the flames towards the roof. There was an explosion and a shower of tile fragments. Her eyes widened. Q-Tangle vanished. Where he had been standing, a huge snake coiled, poised to strike. Granny vanished. Where she had been standing was a large wicker basket. The snake became a giant reptile from the mists of time. The basket became the snow wind of the ice giants, coating the struggling monster with ice. The reptile became a saber-toothed tiger, crouched to spring. The gale became a bubbling tar pit. The tiger managed to become an eagle, stooping. The tar pits became a tufted hood. Then the images began to flicker as shape replaced shape. Stroboscope shadows danced around the hall. A magical wind sprang up, thick and greasy, striking octarine sparks from beards and fingers. In the middle of it all, Esk, peering through streaming eyes, could just make out the two figures of Granny and Q-Tangle, glossy statues in the mists of hurtling images. She was also aware of something else, a high-pitched sound almost beyond hearing. She had heard it before on the cold plain, a busy, chittering sound, a beehive noise, an anthill sound.
"They're coming!"
she screamed about the din.
"They're coming now!"
She scrambled out from behind the table where she had taken refuge from the magical duel and tried to reach Granny. A gust of raw magic lifted her off her feet and bowled her into a chair. The buzzing was louder now, so that the air roared like a three-week corpse on a summer's day. Esk made another attempt to reach Granny and recoiled when green fire roared along her arm and singed her hair. She looked around wildly for the other wizards, but those who had fled from the effects of the magic were cowering behind overturned furniture while the occult storm raged over their heads. Esk ran down the length of the hall and out into the dark corridor. Shadows curled around her as she hurried, sobbing, up the steps and along the buzzing corridors towards Simon's narrow room. Something would try to enter the body, Granny had said. Something that would walk and talk like Simon, but would be something else. A cluster of students were hovering anxiously outside the door. They turned pale faces towards Esk as she darted towards them. They were sufficiently shaken to draw back nervously in the face of her determined progress.
"Something's in there," said one of them. "We can't open the door."
They looked at her expectantly. Then one of them said,
"You wouldn't have a pass key by any chance?"
Esk grabbed the door handle and turned it. It moved slightly and then spun back with such force it nearly took the skin off her hands. The chittering inside rose to a crescendo, but there was another noise too, like leather flapping.
"You're a wizard!"
she screamed.
"Bloody well whiz!"
"We haven't done telekinesis yet," said one of them.
"I was ill when we did fire throwing."
"Actually, I'm not very good at dematerialization."
Esk went to the door and then stopped with one foot in the air. She remembered Granny talking about how even buildings had a mind, if they were old enough. The university was very old. She stepped carefully to one side and ran her hands over the ancient stones. It had to be done carefully so as not to frighten it. And now she could feel the mind in the stones. Slow and simple, but still mind. It pulsed around her. She could feel the little sparkles deep in the rock. Something was hooting behind the door. The three students watched in astonishment as Esk stood, rock still, with her hands and forehead pressed against the wall. She was almost there. She could feel the weight of herself, the ponderousness of her body, the distant memories of the dawn of time when rock was molten and free. For the first time in her life, she knew what it was like to have balconies. She moved gently through the building mind, refining her impressions, looking as fast as she dared for this corridor, this door. She stretched out one arm very carefully. The students watched as she uncurled one finger very slowly. The door hinges began to creak. There was a moment of tension, and then the nails sprang from their hinges and clattered into the wall behind her. The planks began to bend as the door still tried to force itself open against the strength of whatever was holding it shut. The wood billowed. Beams of blue light lanced out into the corridor, moving and dancing as indistinct shapes shuffled through the blinding brilliance inside the room. The light was misty and actinic, the sort of light to make Steven Spielberg reach for his copyright lawyer. Esk's hair leapt from her head so that it looked like an ambulant dandelion. Little fire snakes of magic crackled across her skin as she stepped through the doorway. The students outside watched in horror as she disappeared into the light. It vanished in a silent explosion. When they eventually found enough courage to look inside the room, they saw nothing there but the sleeping body of Simon. And Esk, silent and cold on the floor, breathing very slowly. And the floor was covered with a fine layer of silver sand. Esk floated through the mists of the world, noticing with a curious impersonal feeling the precise way in which she passed through solid matter. There were others with her. She could hear their chittering. Fury rose like bile. She turned and set out after the noise, fighting the seductive forces that kept telling her how nice it would be just to relax her grip on her mind and sink into a warm sea of nothingness. Being angry, that was the thing. She knew it was most important to stay really angry. The Discworld fell away and lay below her as it did on the day she had been an eagle. But this time the Circle Sea was below her. It certainly was circular, as if God had run out of ideas. And beyond it lay the arms of the continent and the long chain of the ramtops marching all the way to the hub. There were other continents she had never heard of, and tiny island chains. As her point of view changed, the rim came into sight. It was night time, and since the disk's orbiting sun was below the world, it lit up the long waterfall that girdled the edge. It also lit up Great Artuin, the world turtle. Esk had often wondered if the turtle was really a myth. It seemed a lot of trouble to go to just move a world. But there it was, almost as big as the disk it carried, frosted with stardust and pocked with meteor craters. Its head passed in front of her, and she looked directly into an eye big enough to float all the fleets in the world. She had heard it said that if you look far enough into the direction that great Arctuan was staring, you would see the end of the universe. Maybe it was just the set of its beak, but great Arctuan looked vaguely hopeful, even optimistic. Perhaps the end of everything wasn't as bad as all that. Dreamlike, she reached out and tried to borrow the biggest mind in the universe. She stopped herself just in time, like a child with a toy toboggan who expected a gentle slope and suddenly looks out at the magnificent mountains, snow-covered, stretching into the ice fields of infinity. No one would ever borrow that mind. It would be like trying to drink all the sea. The thoughts that moved through it were as big and as slow as glaciers. Beyond the disk were stars, and there was something wrong with them. They were swirling like snowflakes. Every now and again they would settle down and look as immobile as they always did. And then they'd suddenly take it into their heads to dance. Real stars shouldn't do that, Esk decided. Which meant she wasn't looking at real stars. Which meant she wasn't exactly in a real place. But a chittering close at hand reminded her that she could almost certainly really die if she once lost track of those noises. She turned and pursued the sounds through the stellar snowstorm. And the stars jumped and settled, jumped and settled. As she swooped upward, Esk tried to concentrate on everyday things, because if she let her mind dwell on precisely what it was she was following, then she knew she would turn back, and she wasn't sure she knew the way. She tried to remember the 18 herbs that cured earache, which kept her occupied for a while because she could never recall the last four. A star swooped past and then was violently jerked away. It was about 20 feet across. When she ran out of herbs, she started on the diseases of goats, which took quite a long time because goats can catch a lot of things that cows can catch, plus a lot of things, plus the sheep, plus catch, plus a complete range of horrible ailments of their very own. When she had finished listing wooden udder, ear wilt, and the octarine gargit, she tried to recall the complex code of dots and lines that they used to cut in the trees around Badass, so that lost villagers could find their way home on snowy nights. She was as far as dot, 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 dash, dot, dash, hub by turnwise, 1 mile from the village, when the universe around her vanished with a faint pop. She fell forward, hit something hard and gritty, and rolled to a halt. The grittiness was sand, fine, dry, cold sand. You could tell that even if you dug down several feet, it would be just as cold and just as dry. Esk lay with her face in it for a moment, summoning the courage to look up. She could just see, a few feet away from her, the hem of someone's dress. Something's dress, she corrected herself. Unless it was a wing. Could be a wing. A particularly tatty and leathery one. Her eyes followed it up until she found a face, higher than a house, outlined against the starry sky. Its owner was obviously trying to look nightmarish, but had tried too hard. The basic appearance was that of a chicken that had been dead for about 2 months, but the unpleasant effect was rather spoiled by warthog tusks, moth antennae, wolf ears, and a unicorn spike. The whole thing had a self-assembled look, as if the owner had heard about anatomy but couldn't quite get to grips with the idea. It was staring, but not at her. Something behind her occupied all its interest. Esk turned her head very slowly. Simon was sitting cross-legged in the centre of a circle of things. There were hundreds of them, as still and silent as statues, watching him with reptilian patience. There was something small and angular held in his cupped hands. It gave off a fuzzy blue light that made his face look strange. Other shapes lay on the ground beside him, each in its little soft glow. They were regular sorts of shapes that Granny dismissed airily as geometry, Cubes, many-sided diamonds, cones, even a globe. Each one was transparent, and inside was... Esk edged closer. No one was taking any notice of her. Inside a crystal sphere that had been tossed aside onto the sand floated a blue-green ball, crisscrossed with tiny white cloud patterns that could almost have been continents if anyone was silly enough to try and live on a ball. It might have been a sort of model, except something about its glow told Esk that it was quite real and probably very big and not, in every sense, totally inside the sphere. She put it down very gently and sidled over to a ten-sided block in which floated a much more acceptable world. It was probably disc-shaped, but instead of the rimfall, there was a wall of ice, and instead of the hub, there was a gigantic tree, so big that its roots merged into mountain ranges. A prism beside it held another slowly turning disc surrounded by little stars. But there were no ice walls around this one, just a red gold thread that turned out on closer inspection to be a snake. A snake big enough to encircle a world. For reasons best known to itself, it was biting its own tail. Esk turned the prism over and over curiously, noticing how the little disc inside stayed resolutely upright. Simon giggled softly. Esk replaced the snake disc and peered carefully over his shoulder. He was holding a small glass pyramid. There were stars in it, and occasionally he would give it a little shake so that the stars swirled up like snow in the wind, and then settled back in their places. Then he would giggle. And beyond the stars? It was the Discworld. A great Artuan, no bigger than a small saucer, toiled along under a world that looked like the work of an obsessive jeweller. Jiggle, swirl. Jiggle, swirl, giggle. There were already hairline cracks in the glass. Esk looked at Simon's blank eyes, and then up into the hungry faces of the nearest things. And then she reached across and pulled the pyramid out of his hands and turned and ran.